Hello, 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 and welcome to My Empty Hands, a podcast about the martial arts with a focus on Kenpo. And so I've got another wonderful guest with me today, Sal Luciano. I'm so terrible about pronunciation of names. So I've probably got to work on that a little bit more, but... we're going to get into your story, where you got started, how the martial arts found you, how Kenpo found you, and just talk about whatever else we happen to come across. But so where did it all begin for you, and we'll go from there.
Sure. For me, well, I come from Judo and Aikido are my mother arts. So for me, Aikido, the spiritual discipline of that, the structure of it, the pure discipline of Aikido, and, into my early teens, into my early 20s, really, learning that discipline, learning that culture, and then my Judo training as well. So kind of crossbred between those two things. And really, I loved it, the grappling, the takedowns in Judo. And there are certain things in Aikido that, you can apply to that, like certain restraints, certain holds, certain things like that. So I did that for a very long time. Loved my training, got my first dan in Aikido and then, other rankings in Judo. And I stuck with that for a very long time because, there's always so much questions, so much to learn. People would come in as guests and they'd be from other countries or other parts of the state. So, and everybody's body moves different. I know mine certainly does. Mm-hmm. So, when you would learn a certain technique and you could play with it, you could do that in Judo. Whereas in Aikido, it is a beautiful discipline, a beautiful way of life. But I feel that, and there are other movements, like there is Aikijutsu out there. So there's more different styles that are more like, like the Japanese police use like Aikijutsu as opposed to soft circle Aikido. Mm. That's just the way it is. So again, crossing that culture and really, asking questions. And I would advise anyone in any martial arts training, always ask questions, always be respectful, be respectful of your teaching, be respectful of yourself. But, if you have the mat alone and you just want to like, hey, why do we move this way? How can we improve it? Can a kick be incorporated? Stuff like that. So really, martial arts really gave me that foundational discipline that's taken me to excellent places in my life. I was blessed with excellent teachers. God has been good to me in other ways, but it all started with, martial arts, learning to respect yourself, the people around you, and that's the most important thing with any martial arts training, the efficacy of what you're learning, the people that you're with. And that's really how it started for me. And, I just kept plugging along with it all through high school and just loved it, and then did some basic kickboxing, basic boxing to try to see, okay, well, maybe a jab will work, maybe this will work, and try to like cross train disciplines as much as possible. So that's important too. Cross training in your training is important. Like if you want to learn the ground, Brazilian jiu-jitsu, American wrestling, you do that for 18 months to a year, you have a solid ground game. You just have to know how to move. And, so again, always add to your foundational arts, always add to what you're doing that way, because the street, in a self-defense situation, you're not an action hero, right? So it's not going to be like a movie. They're going to come out, they're going to do this, and they're going to grab you here. And I wish it worked that way. That would be beautiful. But, in the street is the street is the street in a self-defense situation. So, and you're not going to look good doing any of this either. So the fantasies of that, and, again, with the right training, with the right trainers, the right community internally, that nonsense will vacate the brain as soon as possible. And also, I feel too, know your surroundings. Know you better than anybody will, right? So, maybe if a place is too rough and tumble, hey, don't go in there. Or maybe if somebody, so common sense things, which is not so common. If you can do these things and say, how can I avoid, possibly self-harm, possibly having to harm someone else? Because the other side of self-defense is you need to know every state has different self-defense laws. So where you are in Texas or the South in general, they have all kinds of, you know, genuine self-defense laws, genuine stand your ground laws. Some states don't. So no state to state what that means, because if you pull that off and God forbid you have to, in the course of self-protection of yourself or someone else, take a human life, in those instances, you know, most states, that's manslaughter. And it, the law reads the same as if you were to shoot someone in other states. So knowing that, and knowing that you are the one in control of you and the places you go and the people you're with. So if you have a brain, which most people do, then you need to utilize your common sense and go, you know what? Somebody calls me a bad name or anything else, I'm going to walk away. And that's what you should do. And again, with ethical training that is there, rather it is from the most traditional to the most unorthodox, you know, anyone who is selling a quality philosophy in spirit, mind, and in practice, that's the first thing they would teach you. So I would say focus on those things, and then, you know yourself. And really, you know, I started very young. So, you know, I had the privilege of, when I'm going through those developmental stages, also being a person on the spectrum, the high IQ side, so off the charts smart and socially a work in progress, but a good work in progress, you know, you have to be honest about those things and say, hey, I communicate differently. I may under-communicate at times. I may over-communicate at times. You know, you have to know your mind and, you know, and be honest, because the more honest you are in your training, the better you're going to be as a human being, right? So that's the point of the discipline of the martial, which is, and then the art side of it. So, you know, you need to do what you feel is right. But, you know, I just feel that for, you know, young men and women, you know, you need to, you know, take a few classes, take a few intro classes, do your homework, read books, whatever you need to do. So you go in there knowing, okay, I'm putting my time in this, my means in this, and my heart and soul in this. I need to feel good when I leave here going, did I accomplish something positive or did I just waste time? So that's pretty much how I view that. And I would say that, you know, you need to find that good community. And if you can, you should. And if you can't, don't get discouraged and give up. I mean, you know, because a lot of people, they'll try to focus on too many arts at once. And, you know, again, if you can try to focus on two, that's great. But, you know, try to find the foundational art that works for you, how your body moves, how your mind works. Make sure you like the people there. That's the main thing. I mean, the communal part of it is, if you don't like the people, you're not going to go.
Excellent.
So you have to make sure of that. And then, you know, really, you know, give it that time to be like, and again, when I say time, honestly, give it a year, because you know what? It's new. So of course, new people, new experiences, everyone is at a different place in life. You know, you have to try, if you can at times, put yourself in a society and go, I have my issues. These other people do too. And always communicate that. And if there's ever a problem, say, hey, if there's an issue, if you feel disrespected, if you feel that I have done something to, you know, violate you in training, let's communicate that. Because again, you want an environment where, you know, you can communicate that and you can learn. So, you know, punch in, do what you can, you know, really take that time and really work your basics, rather that's in Aikido or Judo or Kempo. You know, because your basics is what's going to save you. You're going to have time to do that. And that's the most important thing. And really, you know, I still work the basics of those things, you know, because again, the body will change whether you want it or not, no matter how many vitamins or special waters or whatever elixirs, you know, That's just the way it is. So, you know, when I began my Kempo journey, it was in Shaolin Kempo, the Fred Villari system. But if you look through the history of Kempo, it's, you know, James Matosi, William Chow, Ed Parker, Al Tracy, Chuck Sullivan, Larry Tatum, Jeffrey Speakman, Joe Rabella, who I love, and we'll get to him, and you know, Sean Kelly, and the Nick Serio system, the American Kempo system. That's what I'm training in now. So that's basically the founding fathers and the students of American Kempo, Shaolin Kempo. That's Ralph Castro, and to a greater degree, that's Fred Villari. And, you know, I trained in the Villari system for many years. You know, I loved my training. I loved the kata. I loved the culture. You know, I am not a Kempo apologist or politician. That's just me. And, you know, I think in life, as you do a podcast, the more successful you are in anything, you will always have your detractors and your haters, you know, and I think that's what it is. You know, that being said, you know, you have to have the fine line between, yes, I want to make a living, but is this something that can everybody take part of in that space? And that's across the martial arts world, really. That's not just exclusive to Kempo. I think with Fred Villari, a lot of it is, you know, his massive success in the 80s. I mean, his massive success, 500 schools, you know, and I think that would have, and then I think self-promotion, which, you know, everybody did at some point self-promote. And I think, you know, again, the internal politics of the day. I mean, the man has transitioned to the other side, rest in peace. So, you know, I'd like to see, and in the Shaolin Kempo world, you know, at least in the States, that's really Fred Villari, that's Charles Matera, Jim Passard, and Steve Randazzo. Those were his top students. They since formed their own, which is great. But I would love to see, you know, in the Shaolin Kempo world, the same unity that we have in the American Kempo world, right? So, because you need that, you know, you don't want to self-isolate. You want to say, okay, the past is the past. Let's move forward. So I think in the Kempo world in general, but especially in the Shaolin Kempo world, that's the most important thing. Because, you know, if you like what you're doing, if you love what you're doing, like me, I love my Shaolin Kempo training, you know, good people, good community. For me, though, you know, the way my brain works, I read every book and microfilm and I did the deep dive into, you know, so the Kempo system, American Kempo system I'm training in now is the Nick Serio system. And that was the gentleman who trained Fred Villari. And he was technically, he was the guy that instructed him on American Kempo. Fred Villari was a second degree in that system when it was United Studios of Self-Defense, Charles Matera, and those three guys. And then it expanded, you know, and then Mr. Serio, he went back to his system. And, you know, that's pretty much the Shaolin Kempo explosion of the day. And
I want to just kind of jump back here a little bit for a moment. I'm curious, going back to when you started in Aikido and Judo, I'm wondering what was the driving factor for getting involved in martial arts. So for like me, I grew up watching the martial art movies and was always excited about that. And then training specifically in Kempo because of the movie The Perfect Weapon, I got
so involved in, at its finest, yeah,
in Kempo. But I'm curious what was the reasoning behind getting into Aikido and Judo at the start for you?
Sure. Well, you know, as I said earlier, you know, being a high IQ spectrum guy, you know, the culture of the day was not the culture back then. It was, you know, if you're, you know, quite tiny and, you know, you have your stuff, you know, you need to learn how to keep yourself safe and the people around you safe. And the movies were a big influence as a kid, obviously. But as far as like, you know, looking back, it's like, you know, just being smaller than the other kids, having that developmental challenge. It was, you know, unfortunately, you have to defend yourself at times and learn how to do so safely. So that was the big factor for me of, you know, as I say, walk away, but there are times when you have to utilize training for self-preservation. So, you know, that was a big part of it for me. And obviously the movies, because I'm like, I want to move like that. I want to move. Obviously, you know, that was the whole thing. I mean, for me, it was Bruce Lee. I mean, for me, it was, you know, I've seen everything he's done. I love it. It's tremendous. You know, but that's really what it was. Those key factors, other than just the entertainment fact, it was, you know, and again, with Aikido and Judo, the mental discipline that's involved, So, you know, as I get older and matured, and, you know, as society made the right shift to, you know, understanding these things helped. But I mean, again, you know, you have to just be in a space where you have to learn these things, especially someone like myself and others, you know, and at times you'll use it for self-preservation of yourself and others. So that was really, as a child and a teenager, those were the big factors for me, like, you know, and the self-confidence and the self-worth. So, you know, and which is the beautiful thing about martial arts in general, like if you find the right fit, you know, you will grow tremendously as a person. That's really a big factor for me.
And so what was the reason, what brought you to Kenpo? Why did you decide to start training in Kenpo?
Well, for me, it was, you know, I always had a love and a fascination for it. You know, I mean, Ed Parker, you know, just to see these guys move and just to see the syllabus of information and the syllabus of just the perpetual motion and, you know, just seeing that and really going, you know, I can move like that in certain ways. I can adjust, maybe I can take from this and make it a little bit more that. I mean, really the amount of practical wisdom in Kenpo was the big thing. And plus, Ed Parker trained Elvis. I think that's pretty cool. So that was another, you know, I mean, that's awesome. Yeah. So I was like, you know, so, you know, my Shaolin Kenpo journey began, you know, and it was great. I learned a lot of good American Kenpo techniques. Again, as I say, Nick Serio gave the knowledge to Fred Vallari for the American Kenpo and the forms, and it was good. But I just, you know, for me, the way my brain works, it's kind of like the Roadrunner, where it goes and goes and goes and stops and stops and stops. So at a certain juncture for me, it was like, well, I've read every book. I've seen film. I probably know more about that system, honestly, than the people who trained in it for that to 30 years, because I'm an inquisitive person. So for me, it was, you know, loving what I was doing, loving the people there. It was, well, let me reverse engineer it and go to the mother of that system, which was the Serio system. And, you know, learn the American Kenpo basics. And they, and in the Serio system, like the pinyons and are like bunkai, like it's self-defense based. So, you know, it's form and function, practical application, which I love, you know, because the way my brain works, if I can take that apart and piece that together and make it work for me, then I'm all for it. You know what I mean? Like, and that's the thing. So, you know, I love to learn. I'm that guy. I love to read. I love to work out. I just, anything I can do to, you know, absorb positive knowledge and use it in life, I'm all for it, man.
Nice. Very nice. So we have the Aikido, the Judo, we have the Shaolin Kenpo. Is there any other systems that you've gotten involved with?
I've done some Tai Chi. I've enjoyed that. You know, I mean, as a, you know, and again, I've taken that apart too fairly recently, and there's certain things like for self-defense. So, I mean, you know, I mean, again, I love to learn, you know, and again, I think that, you know, when we talk about the tradition is one thing, but then remember, God forbid you're in a situation where you have to apply this, you know, you have to be able to judge out, okay, there's the tradition and the art, but the martial, you need to focus that on, you know, like, and that's what it is. And I think that the beautiful thing about Kenpo is they've done this. American Kenpo has done this thing where, you know, doesn't matter if you're 6'5" or 4'11", you stick with it, you put your mind to it, you can learn this beautiful practical applications art to keep yourself safe. And that's the genius of American Kenpo, where they figured that out. And I think if Ed Parker was alive, he'd still be refining the system. I mean, look at Jeff Speakman, one of his last students with Kenpo 5.0. You know, he's put a ground game in there. He's put a grappling game in there. You know, all kinds of, you know, additions. And I think that, you know, with arts, I think that there's no shame in traditionalizing. There's no shame in keeping it one way. But, you know, you have to understand, all fights start standing up. They probably won't go to the ground, but if they do, and you're most vulnerable on the ground, which is get off the ground, how can you, in a one-on-one situation or multiple situation, end it quickly and keep yourself safe. So I think as Kempo is growing, and it is, I think the newer generations of it are going to, you're going to see it explode into something different for the positive, you know? And I think the living masters see this too. So, you know, I think they must have, this is my conspiracy theory, they must have an idea where it's like, okay, we have to incorporate American wrestling, some form of Brazilian jiu-jitsu, because again, that's just where it's going. And that's an exciting thing. But I also think, like anything else, there'll be the people that want to keep it traditional. And I think that's great. You know, I think that's, if you want to call that a martial discipline, a martial practice in that way. But I also think, too, you have to be open to the idea that, you know, we have to evolve, like everything. Like there was the Model T, and now we have, you know, there's just a digression of anything. You know, evolution is what it is. And, you know, for my Kempo journey, when I had the privilege, oh my God, of talking to Joe Ribello, I love this man. I love him. And he's like, call me anytime. So I call him. I thought we were going to talk for like 10 minutes. 4 hours later, we're just going back and forth. And Joe is the Michelangelo of Kempo. I mean, my God. And he'll just go off on these funny stories, which I love. Oh, I was there in a Senate. And let me tell you, and furthermore, and I'm just, I mean, it was like talking to the Mickey Mantle of Kempo. I mean, God bless that man and what he's still doing. You know what I mean? I mean, he's still learning. He's, you know, wushu and kung fu and Wing Chun screamer. I mean, you know, so, you know, people like that. And again, he's of the original generation. Like he was there. So, and he's the guy that says, even him, you know, we have to eventually, okay, admit a lot of the stuff too doesn't work. And what I mean is, you know, again, back to that traditional thing of, yes, beautiful tradition, but okay, it's not going to be a front punch and a half moon step. It's not, it's going to be a haymaker. It's going to be that. And that's what it is. So I think, you know, anything traditionalized, going back to my original training, it's like, yeah, you have to acknowledge this is what it is. And, you know, I think as far as Kempo goes, that will get there. That is getting there. Because again, people come in with, you know, everybody's cross-trained at this point. It's not like we're back in the 50s where it's like, okay, there was the five places and the five people teaching it, and that was it. You know, now everybody's cross-trained in something else. So the good thing about that is you can go with your repertoire once you've built the trust and go, well, I come from this where we do a blade kick, or I come from this where we do more boxing forms, or, you know, more hand movement, or, you know, Brazilian jiu-jitsu or capoeira, where it's more pantomime with the body. And again, you know, they're not going to reinvent the system, but they'll go, show me what you mean. And if you make that applicable, you go, you know what? We can tweak this. And that's what it is, you know, little tweaks, little things that you can improve it on. And, you know, as the generations continue to go forward, not to eliminate traditional, but to go, okay, instead of doing five swords, right? The prime example, beautiful. But again, how do we tweak it where, hey, my body doesn't move that way? Or can we add something else? Or can we put a lot more grappling in certain things, you know? And it's getting there, because again, the newer generation of people are willing to at least humor the idea that maybe we can tweak it. And that's a good thing, I feel, for Kempo, because, you know, it gives you, and again, it gives the upcoming students, you know, you feel more of that family community where, you know, hey, I helped improve something that's 80 years old. You know, I helped do something for the positive. So that's another thing too. You gotta think about when the older people transition on, the younger people who want to keep it up. So that's, and again, I'm seeing that with American Kempo. It's you know, it's slowly but surely, but, you know, it's happening, and that's great. I mean, you know, there's a lot of beautiful Kempoists out there who are really, you know, pushing that envelope, you know, and that's a good thing. I mean, I'm sure you've seen that in your training as well. You know, where people go, how can I tweak this? How can I make it better? You know, with respect to the founders of the system, respect to, you know, as you go through your Q ranks, as you go through these things, you know, and, you know, if it doesn't work, it doesn't work. So I think that's part of the where I see the evolution of Kempo, and I see that, you know, eventually, and it is, I've seen it, you're seeing it now, you know, we're seeing it together, which is a wonderful thing. And, you know, I think that's a big part of it. And I think that, you know, with American Kempo, it's such a universal family where you have a question about something, you can call someone, you can email, and you can do what we're doing. We can have a discussion and go, well, I think this, or I think that, you know, respectful, a respectful back and forth. And, you know, to me, that's what the martial arts is all about. You know, it's, you know, you can have a difference of opinion, difference of philosophy, but, you know, that's a good thing. And it's a good thing to question, you know, within reason and go, well, I think this, why can't we do it this way? And then, you know what? You have to entertain. You could be wrong. So, you know, someone who's been doing it 40 years, they could explain it to you and you could learn something. So that's the beauty of American Kenpo is, again, there's always going to be questions and it's always going to be growing. I mean, the circular motion, it's going to keep growing in that bigger circle. And again, Kenpo, American Kenpo is very generational. So anybody who's doing like Parker, I mean, the Tracys are probably the closest, like, to first gen Parker, because they were one of his original students, you know, his first students. So you have that. As I said, you have Sean Kelly, who is keeping the torch going in that way. Others of that too. So, you know, you're seeing that. I mean, again, I think, as I say, you know, the older, I mean, Chuck Sullivan's in his 90s. God bless him. He's still going strong. So, you know, you're seeing that. And also, too, you know, you're seeing a meeting of minds, because I think now with American Kenpo, I think the internal politics of the day, it's always going to be there, but it's not as upfront, because, again, you know, people coming in now are, you know, eight generations removed, where, you know, they weren't there when, you know, the forms were invented. They weren't there when this defection happened and that defection happened. So you're seeing more unity because the younger people are like, yeah, that stinks, but we got to go forward the right way. So, you know, we got to put down the rock here. And that's a beautiful thing to see, you know, like in the American Kenpo system I'm training in and been training in for a while. You know, he was a dear friend of Mr. Parker, Raymond Serio. And Ed Parker gave him a ninth dan in American Kenpo. So there's a lineage there and there's a good community there. You know, and I think if, you know, if Mr. Parker were alive, I think he would, you know, have like a meeting of the minds and go, yeah, we're going to improve it, but we're going to have no negativity towards each other because we all came in this to better ourselves. We all, before you get this ranking and that ranking, you know, we all walked on the mat to go, we're going to strap up. We're going to, you know, and that's, you know, where it's going. I mean, there's so many good quality in Kenpo. And, you know, in the martial arts, like, you know, what I tell people is you're going to learn more from the students than you will from the teacher, you know, because when you're on the mat with someone, if they're behaving perhaps in a negative fashion, you can go, well, they didn't start that. That was either put in. So you're going to learn more from just the students, just from that community. And you will. And, you know, again, I look at it like, you know, if you have, quote unquote, a bad experience, okay, you need to learn from and go, how can I better myself in that? And how can I not do that thing? Right? So that's another thing. I mean, you know, most people get so discouraged. And I'm like, no. If it's going negatively, okay, should you walk away? It's up to you. But if you do, glean from, what did I learn from that? So when I ever teach anything, I will never do that thing. And that's not just germane with martial arts, but what you can carry forth from your teachings and which makes you a better person. So, you know, I mean, those are my opinions. You know.
Yeah. So in all of your time training, have you got into the teaching side of that, or are you doing any teaching?
In Aikido, I'll do some like self-defense stuff. Judo, I'll do that, but I'm very particular on, you know, when I take a student, you know what I mean? Like, you know, a young man or a young woman, you know, I sit down with them, and if they're of an age where the parent or the guardian is there, that's a conversation, because, you know, I don't want to see that be abused to the negative. You know, I don't want to teach you something where you can do that and be, you know, a perpetrator of violence, right? So that's first and foremost. And I'm pretty good reading people from the jump. I can kind of say, oh, you know, but again, like, and again, there could be a developmental thing there. So that's why you bring the parents into it and go, okay, he or she, what is the clinical issues, right? How can I, when I'm teaching you this and getting you on your way, how can I help you? You know, what can I do? Because I'm only there when I teach it a certain amount of time, a certain amount of space. So, and again, I've been fortunate when I've taught judo things and when I've taught aikido things that I have a good community of parents where it's like, you know, but you know, you'll always have that thing where it's like, you can tell when someone's a problem, right? So, you know, I won't ethically do that because not only is that a violation of martial arts, that's, you know, accountability and liability, right? Because, you know, unfortunately, there are more schools and independent studios that have been sued for, okay, you put a loaded gun in someone's hand, they did this. Where'd you learn that? And they'll tell you. So, you know, it comes down to responsibility, accountability, and all that. And, you know, like when I see certain things online, like for me, I don't think knife defense stuff should be a public thing, in my opinion. You know, if you build up years of trust and you want to learn that, but again, that's just like a pet peeve in general. I don't care what the art is. You know what I mean? I mean, I get like, yeah, you want to get monetized and you want to go on YouTube. I get the aspects of why, but again, you don't control unless you have a paywall, unless you have that. Who is learning this? Where is this information going? And just, you know, that's another thing. You know, just because you have all this knowledge, you shouldn't just put it out into the wild with no rating system, no anything, because you don't know. So, you know, God forbid, like anything else that falls, you know, if the nuclear keys fall into the wrong hands, right? So, you know, you have to be aware of these things. And there are people who are and people who aren't. And, you know, hey, to each your own. But, you know, that's just a real pet peeve of mine. You know, stuff like that. Or, you know, people who are at a higher ranking thinking they're above, you know, the internal stuff. But that's every art, really. That's not just germane to Kenpo.
Do you have any aspirations or interest in teaching Kenpo?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. And, you know, we're talking about that. So, you know, when that comes, it'll come, you know, but I'm in no rush because again, for me, it's like, you know, I try to Kempoize everything I've learned. Like I try to, you know, put in certain techniques, put in certain things, but it's like, how can I make my training better? You know? So I'm always doing that. I'm always Kempoizing anything and everything I've learned and, you know, it's good. And, you know, I mean, I love teaching wise when I do a judo thing or aikido thing. So I really, really enjoyed the teaching of it, you know. And again, sometimes this stuff that even I will tinker as I'm teaching and going, well, let me teach you this way and let me teach you that way. Because, you know, again, everybody's body is different. So, you know, the way I move is the way I move. That's how it is, right? So, you know, and again, you know, again, back to where this started with efficacy, right? Because, you know, if I'm going to teach, you know, someone a judo thing that I wouldn't teach that to a lot of people. It's, you know, the trust is built where you have this in your arsenal after years of this, you know, us being together, or even if it's a shorter span of time, I'm trusting you and I know you wouldn't abuse that. So that's a thing martial art wise, like you really have to know your students and know yourself. So that's a big part of, you know, what needs to happen. And it is happening, but if it doesn't, I just tell anyone, you know, as I say, you'll learn more from the students, you'll learn more from the space, and, you know, trust your instincts. And that's another thing, you know, if you're going into a place where it's, you know, very, you know, again, just not legitimate as far as, you know, you're just being pushed up the hill to be pushed up the hill, whatever the art is, you know, recognize that and go, okay, I may have this ranking, but do I honestly deserve this? Do I honestly deserve to be, you know? And that's an individual thing. And I think the great thing about belt rankings and the negative is, you know, it started with judo and, you know, Jigoro Gano in judo. That was the first belt system. And then Gichi Fumakoshi was a friend of his, the father of karate. And, you know, here we are today. And, you know, it's one of those things where just because you have a third degree brown or a second degree black, you can still be heard out there in the world. So, you know, it's something to think about. And also, just because you have that higher ranking or rankings, that doesn't make you better as a person. Okay. That just means there's a level of competency you've reached. That doesn't mean, you know, you're a general and you can bark orders and you can do, I mean, that's another thing. So, you know, be aware of that in the martial art world. Like, you know, being pushed is one thing, being owned is something else.
Yeah, there's a lot of different egos and mindsets and personality clashes in the martial arts. And it's not just Kenpo. All the arts suffer that, unfortunately. And that's just something that goes along with being human. We're flawed, but the hope with the training is that we work to become better individuals, better teachers, better students. We should always be striving to be better and to realize that you can't learn everything in one lifetime and in 100 lifetimes. So there's always something to strive for, always something to shoot for. And they should be more of a focus on the training versus trying to chase rank. And you know, one of the sayings, although the belt colors show doesn't mean that you know. And unfortunately there are some out there that aren't interested in that. And you know, we have to make that decision for ourselves of how we want to conduct ourselves, and hopefully try and stay away from the politics and the drama and just work on being better individuals. So I'm curious, so with all of your training, did you get into the competition side of it at all in any of the arts that you've trained? Or
Aikido, yes. Aikido. And the cool thing about that is, you know, a lot of that, I mean, in the States, that's hard to find because it's dying off. It's not a very, you know, marketable, you know what I mean? It's so, you know, when they would have it, they'd have people from like Lithuania and stuff like that. Like, you know, and again, these are guys who have been doing it 30, 40 years, right?
This is actually pretty new to me. I didn't realize that there were Aikido competitions. Can you maybe kind of talk a little bit about how that works?
Sure. You know, well, someone in the States will house, you know, be like, okay, if we're going to do it, you know, to support the dojo. And that's another thing, you know, where the money goes in that, like it's going to keep the rent and isn't it and all that good stuff. But also it's like, you know, you will set it up with the senior Sheehans, whether it's in, you know, wherever in Europe, Lithuania. Cause I trained with a guy who was a senior Sheehan, and he actually did the Aikido combat games. So, you know, it was interesting to see, you know, accomplished Aikidoists like that and really how they do it. And when you say competition, it's really, they judge on how you execute the traditional form. So, you know, if you look at, you know, Zenkyo, Nikkyo, Toshionage, Kodagaishi, Motogaishi, you know, your basics, and then Ukinagashi, the sword, you know, how you do that, and you trade off. You know, with the uki, you know, you become the crash test dummy for a while and then it switches off. So, you know, and you really learn that. And that was cool when they come and, you know, they really show you that, or they'll teach you some Indu training, which is the stick. And, you know, and that's cool because, you know, that's something that, and there's disciplines within Aikido. There's the wooden stick practice, which the last I've seen of that, that's more like I've seen a lot of that in Canada and Europe, but that's a discipline within the discipline, like the bow staff. That's a separate discipline. Whereas, you know, when you're making extensions in Aikido, you know, you're making those movements, those empty hand movements to, you know, if you had to use an implement, it would say, okay, this is, you know, Ukinagashi, this is sword, you know, and this is that. So, you know, it's a pretty... It's like playing chess with your body, basically, right? And, you know, that's what I love. When I can get into one of those and just learn, even if you're watching this, even if you're just a spectator seeing, you know, these senior Sheehans who, you know, went to Japan, you know what I mean? They did the whole, you know, they did the whole spiritual, physical journey. I mean, that alone, just to watch them move. And a lot of those guys... they're in their 80s. They're older guys, and they can still throw like they're 20 or 30, you know what I mean? Just flip you over and get you down. And, you know, so that's cool. As I say, playing chess with your body, the experience though of being part of that, when you, and again, you can trust that when you roll out, when you're being flipped, nothing breaks. You know, that's the other thing too. That's why it's so soft circle, because, you know, using, you know, Ukanagashi, this sword, my favorite technique, you know, monkeying with that alone and making that applicable when you kempoize that as well, oh my god, it's like a perfect pizza. You know what I mean? It's really, it's a wonderful thing to do. So in the Aikido world, you know, it's, you learn the tradition, and, you know, again, you know, like, I would pick the brain of anybody, I'm that guy, right? So, you know, I did one in my god, 2017. It was, you know, and the guy was very nice, and, you know, senior Shihan, and we're just talking about that. And, you know, size does matter in arts, but especially too, this guy was huge. I mean, he was like 6 something and just a rock of a man. So, you know, him being able to control someone, he could use the traditional teachings and make that work, because he's a bigger guy, he can muscle manipulation, you know, how to guide someone, myself, you know, being 5'11, not tiny, but I'm not, you know, a rock of a guy, right? So, you know, just picking his brain and going, you know, some things, you know, that makes sense, or this doesn't make sense, or why do we do it? So again, it goes back to questioning respectfully and just saying, hey, I think this, but I actively entertain, not only could I be wrong, I might be wrong, right? So, you know, stuff like that, which I enjoy.
So does it work off of a system where, like, you're getting points, or I'm just trying to kind of think of it from the standpoint of, like,
no, you do get
in a jiu-jitsu competition, you know, you getting into certain positions or getting a submission, or
no, you do get that. You do. So when somebody taps out, they just throw it out, or they kind of go like that or whatever. So they tap, or they'll bang on the, you know, tap out. So there's that too, because they will apply a little music to you. So you'll feel that right away when your arm is being bent a certain way, or you're on the ground. So, or your hand is being manipulated. So you do tap out, and it's also submission, but it's, how did you execute? Like in Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu, it's the same thing. Like a double leg takedown, it's like, how did we execute it? And how did you do that and not hurt your head or your neck, or, you know, other things? So it's the same principle. You're being graded on technique, submission, and speed. That's a big thing too. But, you know, also it's one of those things too, where, you know, not everybody's at a senior enough level. So they know that, you know, I'm going to go extra gentle. When I say gentle, they'll flip you, they'll get you on the ground, they'll pin you, and you'll tap out because you don't want your arm to break off. So that's a good thing. So,
okay. So it does work kind of similar to like a Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu or a Judo competition.
Because the founder of Aikido, it was more Aikijitsu based. It was much more, the original style of it was Aikijitsu, Osensei. But then the devastation of World War II, he changed it to soft circle. And as you gain the trust of your uki, you know, you'll learn some of the Aikijitsu. So it was purposely put as a pacifist art, you know, and how to, again, the mental part of it. And again, you know, the way of harmony is a philosophy. You can apply that to anything, but you also have to know, okay, back to where this started again. The street doesn't work that way. So, you know, again, you have to, you understand that, again, not being an action movie, it's like, again, if you have to restrain someone, you get them down, you keep yourself safe, you get away, you know, you, in any teaching, but especially that's the foundation of Aikido, is the nonviolence of it. Just because you're learning this, and when you cross train, and again, that's an individual thing. Like for me, you know, that's how I see it. Like, hey, you could insult me and I'd walk away. So would you, because it's common sense, right? It would be like, hey, do I want to throw my life away over someone called me a really nasty thing? And the answer is no. So, you know, that's what it comes down to. So, I mean, and again, same thing with judo. It's the same thing. Yes, you can dismantle a person, but unless you're in danger of yourself or keeping someone safe, that's when you use this. This is not a parlor trick to be abused. I know a kempo. This is not to be abused. It's not to show off as far as I can do this. I'm not, sure. Why would you want to? Is the deeper, well, you know, why would you want to, right? Mm-hmm. So, you know, it goes back to efficacy in training, self-efficacy. And, you know, again, you know, knowing yourself, and, you know, you know you better than anybody will. So that's what it comes down to. And also knowing that, just because you can, you shouldn't, you know, and unless you're literally cornered, okay, God forbid you're in a situation where you have no choice, that's the line of no choice. They crossed into that to do that. I always say, walk away, run away. If they chase you, that's their problem.
Gotcha. Now, so I asked this of everyone that I've spoken with that has trained in multiple arts. So shifting back to the Kenpo side of things, when you got involved in Kenpo, was there a difficulty period, a adjustment period from being in these other systems to getting into Kenpo, or were you able to kind of pick it up?
It was difficult because it was such a brand new thing, and there's such a syllabus of information, especially crossing Kenpo culture. So like in the Shaolin world, that's heavy kata and, you know, that. But in American Kenpo, there is kata, but in Shaolin, it's heavily kata based. So there was that. Learning to move my body a different way. Like, okay, I have to learn how to extend this way. So it took me a while, but once I got down, I got down. But it took me, you know, a long time to train my body, really, to move like that. You know, it took a while. You know, it took, you know, rigorously practicing, you know, and that's the thing, practice, practice, practice. So now I can move that way, and my body's like, oh, this feels crazy. And then you get comfortable with it. So it took a while, but, you know, I was able to get there and, you know, recognize certain things, because Kenpo is a mix of everything, American Kenpo, right? So, you know, like Ed Parker had a heavy judo background. So I recognized, like, okay, I know what this is. I know, you know, you can just sense it and do it and go, okay. So that helped too. And also with Kenpo, there's such a wealth of an arsenal of information where, you know, you could pick something apart, like, you know, technique 3, combination 3. I mean, just that alone, just that whole, that to me is like just my pride and joy of that. You know, because it's so basic and it's such a fun thing to do. I mean, oh my God, it's like Christmas to me. You know what I mean? Or, you know, bending branch, menacing twirl, you know, just like Christmas, because it's so simple and functional, right? Like, you know, and that's what I love about American Kenpo is it's just, once you vigorously practice, you'll get that down. And for me, being a spectrum guy, like, you know, memory retention and all that. So to the positives of that, and really just practice, practice, and practice. And then when it just becomes like getting up and someone asks you what your name is and you can answer, it's kind of like that I enjoy, because it's like, oh my God, I love this. You know, I love it. It is awesome. Especially too, when you're working with a partner that'll be like, hey, let me help you tweak it this way to make it better. Or, you know, and that's another thing too. Like when I train in anything, I like to stand in different spots and stuff like that. Like, you know, that's just my thing where it's like, you know, if you get used to comfortable training in one specific area of standing, then, you know, it's not going to be like in the street. I'm not in my spot. You know what I mean? Like, you know, it's not going to work that way. So I always like, it takes me, you know, not that long to pick up on a technique, but then I'd be like, can we move position? Like, can I stand where you are? Can I, because again, the muscle memory, that's what practice is. So you practice, and at least I do, in every part of the floor, where that gives you the confidence of, okay, I'm walking down the street, God forbid something happens. You know, the muscle memory of it is too. And that's another thing you have to train, because, you know, it's not going to be like when you're in the dojo, you're not going to be with people you like. It's not going to be in comfortable clothes. It's going to be, you're in regular attire like we are, or in formal attire, and you move differently that way. That's how it is. So, you know, stuff like that. And really, you know, monkey around with that idea. And that's why I always train in different plots. I'll get a technique down. I go, I want to train in a different way, because you'll move different. You know, your body's like, wait a minute, I'm not standing it this way. I'm not here. So really challenging your mind like that is, I mean, being a high IQ spectrum guy, that's how I live. But I would just say, like, to anyone listening or who's going to get into Kenpo, you know, do that and you'll be amazed. Like, okay, I'll move differently, and you'll have a different reaction to it. You know, you'd be like, oh my God, I didn't know I could do it this way, or, you know, at this angle. So, you know, really, really, you know, do that and test yourself. And also, again, you know, if you have to ask yourself, does this work for me? You know, is this working? Like we said a few minutes ago about chasing rank, you know, chasing rank, unfortunately, is a rampant thing in all arts. But, you know, I would challenge anyone to say, you know, that, you know, you can always not accept it or rescind it. You can always say, well, I'm comfortable at this level. Let me make sure my curriculum is, you know, at this level. And if you want to, and you know what, honestly, if you want to stay there, there's no shame in that. There's no shame in saying, I'm content to be whatever the rank is. I'm happy with that, you know, and that's another thing too. Don't feel inadequate just because, you know, and that's the whole thing of it, you know, where it's again, like, you know, I'm a third degree in judo and it's like, I've been offered higher and I don't want it. I'm happy where I am. Like, I'm a happy boy, you know, I'm just happy. Because again, like, I'm not looking, I'm not chasing that and anything above that's honorary anyway. But again, be happy with what you're doing, you know, and that's anything, especially in Kenpo. Like, hey, if you're happy being a third degree brown belt and you want to stay there for the duration, hey, if that's working for you, good for you, you know. And then if you feel, you know, as many years as you feel, okay, now I feel genuinely ready that when I test for my, for, you know, when I go through the 3-2-1 system and I go for my black, I can look in the mirror and go, I deserve this genuinely. And that's another thing. I mean, take Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu. There are people who are content to be in their ranking because they're happy learning what they're learning, you know, and that's another thing too. And back to judo, you know, the Gracies, the Machados, they were all judo guys and they adopted the judo ranking system into Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu. So again, you know, that's why in judo, the highest you can get is a red belt. A pure red belt is the highest. That's the pride and joy, the dream of anybody in judo or Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu. So, you know, again, those are good things to aspire to, if you want to call that what it is, your level of training. And also, if you genuinely deserve that incentive, then you should go for it. But, you know, don't feel you're in a rush to get there, because guess what? You know, I would rather you be the best purple belt or the best third degree brown or the best whatever. And I know when you leave, you can handle yourself, as opposed to pushing some poor soul up the hill and they go, I have a black belt now, and they get lit up because they just don't have it. And they were just in it for the rank, as opposed to, you know, what is this about keeping myself safe? I mean, that's another thing where you got to watch that too. If somebody's just chasing that going, if that's all you want, then go on Amazon and get yourself a belt. You know what I mean? If that's what this is, you know, if that's all you're chasing is this, then, you know, martial arts is not for you. You know what I mean? And that's another thing too, where, you know, that's a rampant thing. But, you know, as I say, you know, this is how I think. And I think that most people share this philosophy, which is a good thing, you know, because that's another thing. You know, I've seen that in things where people just, I want to get, I'm like, okay, but can you honestly tell me anything you're training that you feel secure that you walk out that door? You're not a hero, not an action hero, but you can keep yourself and the people safe. That's a real question. I mean, you could be, you know, a black belt of a high rank or mid rank or just whatever. And then, you know, if you're just chasing it, you're going to get yourself hurt, God forbid, and the people around you. So, you know, just buyer beware and lesson learned. So, you know, that's a big part of it.
Yeah, no, the mat and the streets, those are what's going to show your rank, not some cloth around your waist. So
yeah,
you know, that's that's definitely something to, you know, for those that are just out there chasing the ranks, you know, the mat in the street are going to show what your rank really is. So
yeah, and again, the thing with that too is, you know again, I think that it's an individual journey, but again, you know, it's, and that's something you got to watch out for too. If somebody comes in and they want to be, you know, the toughest cat in the world, you know, whatever that may be, it's like, I wouldn't train that person. I, you know, me personally, like, if you want to go and on your own journey, that's your business, but I'm not going to impart the knowledge I was saying earlier to somebody who's going to do that, because, you know, and you can read that pretty early. So most, you know, associations, most systems weed that out, which you got to watch out for, are the indie guys, the guys that, you know, I'm whatever, and you know, and you try to be like, so, okay, man, you know, cool, show me. And then it's like, you know, so that's another, you know, that's another thing where, you know, with the advent of the internet, unfortunately, that gives quarter to a lot of perhaps fraudulent martial artists as well. But that's no surprise to anybody in general. So, you know, it's one of those things where, you know, watching something cool is one thing. Okay, that's fine. We all like to do that. But then to train with somebody, man, you know, really, that's, you know, legitimacy in life is everything. But in life, I don't care what it is, whether you're the chairman of General Mills or you are a kitchen porter, okay, you have to have a certain level of competency and legitimacy in anything you do. You know, integrity, honesty, hard work. You know, these are the things in life and in martial arts that go side by side. So again, watching some Zippo flashy cool nonsense is one thing, but going, I want to learn that. And when you call that person on respectfully, just say, hey man, what's your story? Can we talk? Can we do this? And it's a wall of, oh, it was a secret and we met him right here and we flew to the Andes, or just nonsense, right? You know, illogical. You know, hopefully you pick up on it and go, this person perhaps is not a legitimate martial artist. So he's going to teach me the ancient art of crapola. So I don't want to learn that, right? And that's another thing. So, you know, and I think that's more with, again, it goes back to common sense, which is not so common, but, you know, just stuff like that, you know, and that's just, you know, par for the course. But, you know, anybody listening out there, you know, again, watching something cool is one thing, but if you reach out, we all have all the Zippo flashy devices. So if you want to learn something cool like that and the red flags such as that go, then yeah, that's not legitimate, whatever that art may be, whatever that style may be. So again, buyer beware with that stuff, you know, really have a conversation with somebody, get to know them. And if they are, they got certificates, they got all the, you know, I mean, really honestly, oh, hey, call the guys who taught me. And then, you know, I mean, really just full transparency, really, because, you know, again, you know, the student teacher relationship is the most sacred thing. Okay. The most sacred, and to abuse that, to me, I find that morally reprehensible. So, you know, that's it, because, you know, you're taking a young person with God only knows their internal strife or what they're dealing with. And, you know, you're going to believe the master, quote unquote. So, you know, that to me, besides the financial part of it, which is also awful. Also, it's the betrayal of that trust between student and teacher. So, you know, for anybody listening out there who, you know, thinks, keep it simple. The easy way is not the martial art way. The easy way, you know, if you, this is easy. That's another, you know, that's another, you know, red herring. So, I mean, just again, be aware of these things. And I tell people all the time, you know, if somebody's being a jerk online or whatever, don't even comment. Just let them go in obscurity. Don't waste mental energy that you don't have on some jerk or jerks. Just that's it. You don't have to watch it. Just that's it. Yeah, that's it. If they haunt you, you just blah, whatever. But don't. You know, put your mental energy on people that get you angry. No other reason than that. So again, you know, stuff like that, I would say just be aware of that, be present that unfortunately there are people out there who you don't care and are not ethical in life and in martial arts. So be aware of these things, be omnipresent of these things, you know, and as I say, ask questions, you know what I mean? And if somebody's legit, they're going to answer those questions. So you got nothing to worry about, you know?
Yep. Very nice. Very nice. All right. So we're going to move to our lightning round here. So we've got a few questions to wrap things up with. First one being, do you have a favorite technique?
In general or just in gameplay?
Since you've got multiple arts under your belt there, let's go ahead and get one for Kenpo and one for not Kenpo.
Okay. Kenpo. Oh my God. There's so many. Oh my God. Well, combination three, technique three, my pride and joy. You know, I like menacing twirl. I love that. Breaking branch and Kenpo. Those are my favorites. I mean, the terminology may be different also out there. So keep in mind, you know, different syllabuses, but if you were to see what I'm talking about, you would say, I know this has a different name or number. So that's it. Now in judo, you know, I love to grapple. I'm that guy. So a good, you know, armbar takedown, you know, something so basic like that. So I like that. And in Aikido, you know, I love a good Zankyo, Nikyo. That's like an arm drag takedown thing as well. So, you know, stuff like that. I mean, those are my, again, just pride and joy, enjoyable all day long, twice on Sundays.
Very nice. Very nice. All right. Next question. Do you have a favorite form and or set?
Favorite form? That's a beautiful question. I like the five block setting Kenpo. So I like that. I like the like it's does the five I get that I get it wrong too all the time, but it's the five handset blocks, you know, so, so I like that game. Okay. Crank and tempo. Because I like to move like that. You know what I mean? I like the handset movements. In Aikido, that's all form. So I mean, again, certain things like I just named are my favorites. And in judo, or just the grappling. I mean, I'm not a fan of the ground. I mean, I'll go to the ground, but I'm not like, oh my God, you know what I mean? So you know, but oh no, I love it. I love it all genuinely with Kenpo, because again, there's still stuff that as I'm still going through, I'm like, I have to do this differently. I'm still learning. So you know what I mean? It's one of those things where it's like, it's just, I love it all, man.
Yeah, it's always always evolving, always changing and growing. So good. All right. Next question. Do you have a favorite weapon?
Favorite weapon. I like some sword stuff when it comes to Aikido. So I like to do that, you know, and again, taking the open hand, you know, sword stuff and putting a real sword there makes a big difference. Like, okay, this is why you're running an empty hand. So when you have a sword, you know, I like that traditional movement of that. So I love that. When I can do that, maybe once a year, maybe once a month, when I can get a chance, I'm there.
Very nice. Very nice. Okay, then I guess we're going to do the last question. I've been kind of playing around with whether or not to split this up, but we'll just go with it one way today. Sure. And that is, if there's anyone you could train with, living or dead, fictional or non-fictional, besides Ed Parker, who would you want to be able to train with?
Besides fictional or not? Well, I'm a big movie guy. I love movies. I'm that guy. So, you know, for me, the Christian Bale Batman, the first one, where it explained everything, where he trained, who built the Batmobile, everything. Morgan Freeman at his greatest, who's always old, by the way. But if I had to train, Liam Neeson as Ra's al Ghul, just as that mentor, just that ice fight where he's fictional, that'd be the fella.
Very nice, very nice. Do you have a non-fictional person that you'd like to throw in there?
Muhammad Ali, if he was alive, if he was alive, Muhammad Ali, hands down, I'd walk there barefoot in the snow to train with him without question.
Very nice, very nice, very nice. Yeah, no, he's the greatest for a reason.
He really was the greatest, yeah.
Very nice, very nice. I like it. All right, so now we are at our point for a shameless self-promotion. So I can go ahead and plug anything you like, or if there's anything that you wanted to get out there that we didn't mention, now's your time, and let's hear it.
Sure. Well, for me, you know, I do a lot of comedy stuff. I share a lot of that martial arts stuff, political stuff, all that good stuff. I share a lot of stuff about like autism spectrum stuff. You know, get the message out there. I mean, I diversify. I'm a crazy sports guy, as you know. So, you know, stuff like that. So, for anybody who wants to, you know, follow me, you know, Sal Luciano on Facebook. I'm always doing something positive out there. You know, big following, big community. So stuff like that. If anybody wants to follow me, Sal Luciano on Facebook, I'll be there. Martial art wise, or you know, acting or stand up wise, you know. Let me know what you need, and let's build good community.
Very nice. Yeah, I'll make sure to get those, your links and stuff in the show notes. So, yeah, make sure to send me any of those that you want in there, and I'll put them in. But yeah, no, I thank you so much for taking the time to chit chat with me and tell your story. We'll definitely have to do this again. And
oh, absolutely. Yeah.
Get into to more of the journey and talk some movies and all kinds of things like that. So
absolutely.
Yeah. I thank you so much again. And I will be in touch when this is ready to go out. And thank you. And we'll keep an eye on all the great things that you're working on.
Appreciate it. Thank you.
Thank you for listening to My Empty Hands. If you enjoyed the show, please share it with a friend. If you didn't enjoy it, please share it with an enemy. If you'd like to be a guest, or if you would like to recommend a guest for the show, please email me at podcast@talkingkenpo.com. Thank you.